Welcome to The Owlish Folk, a podcast that answers questions about the English language. I'm Amanda, and with me is Dave, who always gets himself in unfortunate kankadorts.
Kankadorts?
Yeah.
Kankadorts.
So it has three meanings: a state of suspense, a critical position, or an awkward affair, but the last one is for you.
An awkward affair?
Yeah.
Like an extramarital affair?
No, not like that.
Okay, good.
Just kind of uncomfortable, awkward situations.
I'm in one now.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
No, like well, about that one time when you shat your pants in the shower.
Why was I wearing pants in the shower?
I don't know,
that
you were
was
drunk.
Awkward. Oh, dear.
Anyway, it's obsolete and very rare. In fact, I can't think of the last time someone used it.
Today? You did it?
Okay, you don't have to be rude, okay, and snappy.
Kankadorts?
Kankadort. K-A-N-K-E-D-O-R-T.
I think every listener should try and use this in a sentence today, and then let us know on Facebook, how did you get on?
Somebody is going to say, I got punched in the face.
Yeah, I got punched in the kankadorts.
I like that one.
Right.
It was used in Chaucer's Troilus and Cressida in 1374.
My favorite.
Really?
No.
Was Troilus not in a kankadort? Anyway, what is today's question?
Today's question comes from Thomas, and it's about grammar.
Oh, my.
All right, no, please come back. Come back. Oh, goodness.
Don't run away.
All right.
Help!
So the question is this. I was taught to never split infinitives. Mm-hmm. Clever. Is this a real rule in English grammar? So are we allowed to split infinitives in English grammar?
But first, let's start with what is an infinitive?
Honestly.
An infinitive is the two-word form of a verb. To illustrate, to jump, or to laugh. So if you split them, you put an adverb in between two in the verb.
Right, so two is a subordinator, and then we've got the verb.
That's
so
right.
We stick an adverb that describes the verb in between those words.
The most famous split infinitive comes from Gene Roddenberry when he wrote the introduction to Star Trek, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
To boldly go. So we've split to the subordinator from the base form of the verb go.
Yes.
Boldly. That describes how we go. All right.
But if he changed it boldly to go, that sounds very strange. I don't think you get the same effect.
You don't.
For the meaning of what that's supposed to mean.
Couldn't we say to go boldly?
That sounds good.
It does. But it does still sound a little bit cumbersome. We're so used to the actual phrase that sounds a bit weird now.
Right.
Okay. Are there any other examples of split infinitives then?
Well, how about something like she used to secretly admire him?
So she used secretly to admire him.
That's right.
She used to admire him secretly.
Mm-hmm.
We could say that. We don't have to split
no,
it, right?
No, yeah. But you have to be careful because when you split an infinitive, it kind of can change the meaning of the sentence depending on what that adverb is. So if you have a sentence, you have to really watch him. Really splits to and watch, right? You have to really watch him means maybe watch him carefully. But if you say you really have to watch him, then you're saying it's important that you watch him.
Right. So you have to really read this book.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to read this book.
Yes.
Yeah, there's definitely a difference. You have to really read this book means read it closely.
Right.
You really have to. It's a strong recommendation
yeah.
that you read it. Now, in the question, Thomas said, I was taught to never split infinitives. So to never split, we've got the adverb of frequency, never, in between to and split. Clever. I saw what
Clever
he did there. I wonder if he knew he had actually done that, or did he split the infinitive without thinking about it? I imagine it was deliberate. Kind of like a joke. Well done, Thomas. Very funny.
You will get a gift.
Really?
Okay.
I could edit that out. All right. No gifts. So where does this rule come from? The rule that we should not split infinitives?
This rule is one of many strange rules that were concocted in the 18th and 19th century.
So it's really recent then. It's not a really ancient rule. Okay.
Yeah, and they were created by these Latinists that wanted to try to force English to play by the rules of Latin. And I think people have to remember, English is a Germanic language. It's not a Romance language like French or Spanish, Italian or Portuguese that come from Latin. So you can't force these Latin rules on English.
It's not even a Latin rule, though, because a Latin infinitive is only one word. You couldn't split an infinitive in Latin. So an infinitive form of a verb, which, just to be clear, an infinitive form is a form of a verb without any tense. So it's the simplest form of the verb. And in Latin, it's just one word, where we would say to go, to eat, to fight, to split, to hit, to clobber. In Latin, it's as one word.
And you know who's responsible for this rule of splitting infinitives? Henry Alford, a classical scholar and dean of the Canterbury Cathedral. So he really criminalized this idea of being able to split infinitives. And in a very popular grammar book, which came out in 1864, that was called A Plea for the Queen's English, Henry Alford mistakenly declared that two was part of the infinitive and that you couldn't separate those parts. And as you mentioned, he was probably influenced by the fact that the infinitive, which of course is the simplest form of a verb, is one word in Latin and it can't be split. So he, as I just said, he took this, he tried to kind of press the laws of Latin upon it. And that's where it came from. That's why we do it.
And so, in the 1800s, these grammarians were scholars and they obviously thought very highly of themselves. Mm-hmm. They made up these rules and expected everyone just to follow along.
Yeah.
It was not universally agreed upon, though, at the time.
Right.
And I think we have this idea that scholars at the time and writers at the time followed these rules.
No, they were really, some people were against it. They were very angry that he would even suggest that.
Yeah, so I've got from contemporaries, George Bernard Shaw said the rule was fatuous. And Henry Fowler said adherence to the rule were non-split diehards and bogey haunted creatures. Ooh, and nice. Ernest Gowers said it's a bad rule. And yet still prescriptivists, people who follow grammar rules very strictly, still think this is a rule. And even today, there are some purists who stick to it.
In 2009, a book came out by Patricia T. O'Connor and Stuart Kellerman. And it was called, or it still is called, The Origins of the Specious, Myths and Misconceptions of the English Language. And in that book, the writers say that a few years ago, they got a call from the editor at the New York Times, and he had a news flash from Oxford University Press. Two Oxford dictionaries, one in the US and one in Britain, were saying that it was okay to freely split infinitives. And people
freely split,
yes,
okay.
And people freaked out. They freaked out. They said, no way, this is a law. This is a rule. We can't break that. You know, we can't. How can you allow this? And, you know, so you kind of get these two sides. People saying, well, it sounds better. You should do it.
So, yeah, they create the rule and then people feel they should follow it. But actually, people don't follow the rule anyway, because sometimes it sounds absurd and really awkward to try and not split, try and keep these infinitives intact. So, for example, talking about understanding, I listen carefully to better understand what you're saying. I listen carefully better to understand. I listen carefully to understand better, we could say, but to better understand is much
it
more natural.
Good.
Yeah, and we're so used to this. And before the 1800s, it was normal to split your infinitives. It wasn't a rule until somebody just invented a rule.
Yeah. It happens so much with this language, isn't it? People just decide, I don't like that, I'm going to change it.
And in the past, when these grammarians had so much authority, they could make rules as they wished. So I did mention prescriptivists, and I guess that's worth explaining. So there are two viewpoints with English grammar. There's prescriptivists who think grammar follows a set of rules, and there are descriptivists who believe rules or patterns are found within how people use language. And prescriptivists are far more focused on formal language and following rules to be formally correct. Whereas descriptivists think that formality is just a maybe more rigorous way of using informal language. All right. So should we split infinitives or not?
This is my conclusion. I say do whatever makes the meaning clear and the writing easier to understand.
And it's not just in writing, it is also in speaking.
That's right.
And since writing mimics speaking, yeah, we go for clarity, mm-hmm. make sure people who are listening or reading can understand as clearly as possible.
I think, too, when you're writing formally, people would probably say don't split the infinitives unless the alternative wording seems clumsy or would alter the meaning of your sentence. But even then, sometimes splitting the infinitive can sound very formal.
Sometimes
and very
it,
nice.
It can. It's totally yeah. acceptable. We also have the situation where you split an infinitive with a number of adverbs, more than one adverb. Mm-hmm. So we might split to listen carefully, to carefully listen, to politely and carefully listen, to sincerely and politely and carefully listen. That can become confusing if you split the subordinator from the yeah. verb by too many adverbs. So maybe you would think of a different way of wording something like that. It would become awkward. But I think if it's not a rule, then we don't need to worry about splitting or not splitting so much as wording things yeah. appropriately and clearly. David Crystal, who's a very eminent linguist,
I love him.
But his quote on this, I think, is brilliant. He says, teaching someone to avoid split infinitives is not going to improve a child's communicative abilities one jot. There are better ways of using the time in the classroom than worrying about how to maintain a 200-year-old conception of grammatical correctness, condemning non-standard English, and complaining about linguistic variation and change.
Yeah. He has a good point.
He does, right? Is the rule even worth enforcing? Is it a rule in the first place? Language changes. And what is grammatical correctness anyway? Now, I've got... you said the rule came from a book written in 1864, and it was about the Queen's English, right? Now, I have a much more recent book which also argues generally in favour of not splitting infinitives. So this is by Eric Partridge, who wrote a number of language usage books, including Usage and Abusage from 1954. And a lot of...
I like that title.
A lot of people... It's great, right? A lot of people studied this book in school. It was a grammar textbook for grammar schools at the time. So... he argues very firmly in favour of keeping the infinitive intact, in favour of not splitting, because he thinks it's clearer generally to not split your infinitives, not to split your infinitives. But at the end of this quite long passage, which I'm not going to quote, he does end with, avoid the split infinitive wherever possible, but if it is the clearest or the most natural construction, use it boldly. So he says, if you need to, then split and it's okay. Boom, the end.
So back in the 1940s, Raymond Chandler, who of course is one of the famous hard-boiled fiction writers responsible for The Big Sleep, for example, he was writing an article for the Atlantic Monthly about Hollywood, and there was this copy editor, Margaret Much. She was proofreading his article for the magazine and tried to correct his hard-boiled prose. So if people aren't really familiar with hard-boiled fiction, you know, if you think about the movies from film noir, you get these hard detectives, you know, there's a lot of fast-moving dialogue, and the grammar isn't perfect. It's very slangy, informal dialogue. So Chandler got really angry, and he wrote a letter to her boss, and he said, when I split an infinitive, God damn it, I split it, so it will remain split. But he kept on... just boiling in his anger about this, and he wrote her a poem attacking grammar taboos, and it was called Lines to a Lady with an Unsplit Infinitive.
Okay.
I'm not going to read the whole poem, but here's a few lines. A lot of my style is vile, for I learned to write in a bar. The marriage of thought to words was wrought with many a strong sidecar. A lot of my stuff is extremely rough, for I had no maiden aunts. Oh, dear Miss Much, go leave your clutch on Noah Webster's pants.
Mm-hmm.
infinitive prohibition is the number one myth of English grammar.
I have some other myths about English grammar. Some really cool other myths. So, and many of these are going to be familiar to people, I think. So, I have a preposition should never come at the end of a sentence.
That's the second myth of English grammar.
So, don't end a sentence with a preposition. And this was argued for by a number of writers and a number of grammarians. I've got grammarian Robert Louth. So he goes on to say, but placing the preposition before the relative is more graceful as well as more perspicuous and agrees much better with the solemn and elevated style. So he means if you're writing formally or in a way that is needs to be understood precisely, then the preposition should not go at the end of the sentence. So David Crystal says of these prescriptivist ideas, he says really they work mostly as class discriminators. So people who want to stick very rigidly to these formal grammar rules want to to reinforce their elevated position in society so they can look down on the common folk who don't pay attention to these made up, perhaps unnecessary grammar rules.
So this section, let's talk about some misusage that we despise. Now, I would like you to go first.
I did make a long list, and I've cut the list down because a lot of these things will offend people. All right. So the first thing that winds me up is when people say unnecessary, redundant things. So 3 a.m. in the morning. I was awake till 3 a.m. in the morning. If you say a.m., I know it was the morning. Don't make me listen to extra words.
It's like old adage.
An adage is necessarily old.
Oh, yes.
An adage.
Okay.
ATM machine, ARC card.
Yeah.
Yeah, the M is machine, the C is card. Let's not waste time with these unnecessary words. But maybe I'm wasting time by complaining about them now. What have you got?
I really hate FOMO.
What on earth is FOMO?
It's an abbreviation for fear of missing out.
Fear of missing out.
It's FOMO. The same thing with YOLO.
See, YOLO, I am with you on that. I hate YOLO. I think it's the stupidest thing. No sensible thinking person ever said YOLO, unless they were saying, I hate YOLO. But FOMO, fear of missing out, I quite like that.
Oh, my dad uses that. Yeah. Sorry, Dad.
There is a thing when the people in the previous generation start using a saying, yeah. It becomes uncool. FOMO. I'm going to start using that if that's all right with you. I do like it, fear of missing out.
You're going to hold that hostility from our fight earlier and just...
Yeah.
Something that I can add, though, to your redundancy is the I personally.
Yes, I is personal. Yeah, all right. Excellent. All right, we're friends again.
Okay, love you.
Do you have any more? Because I said two.
Irregardless.
Oh, irregardless.
Dave just kicked a cat.
I did.
He's so angry.
All right, so irregardless, regardless.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
How about stuff like amazeballs or awesome sauce?
I've never heard awesome sauce. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a US thing. I don't know.
I think it depends who says it. The first time you hear it, you would think, ha, that's kind of funny. But as soon as old people start saying it, are we old people yet? As soon as old people start saying it, it loses its charm.
Yeah, I think that's the point. If it's a kid or maybe a teenager, that's fine. But if you have I was going to say my dad again. Sorry, yeah. Dad. An adult being like, that's awesome sauce. I'm like, please don't say that.
There's going to be a point where your children, my children say these things and then we start saying them back and they're going to say, don't say it. It's embarrassing when you say it. Yeah, I have a few others, but we put some of these on the Facebook page and we had an interesting chat about it. Some cool responses. There was one...
I'm going to get myself in a kankadort right now.
Yeah. There was one which was, I could care less rather than I couldn't care less.
Yes.
If you could care less, then you care enough.
Yes.
You care a bit, but if you couldn't care less, then you care not at all.
You know what's an interesting missaying? Another thing coming. It's not another thing. It's another think.
What?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
I think it's another thing coming.
No, it's think.
Another think coming?
Yeah. Think coming. Another thought coming. Think. Yeah. Anyway.
Should we wrap up here?
Okay.
All right, should we wrap up here?
Let's wrap it up and kick it in the bars.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to us today.
I'd like to say a big thank you to our podcast host platform, Anchor.
Thank you, Anchor.
What did you call me?
I said, thank you, Anchor.
Thank you for listening.
And you know what? I want to say a very large thank you and a very big hug to all of our Facebook supporters and all the people that follow us on Twitter and Instagram. It's really wonderful. Thank you. Feeling a bit sensitive about it.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say thank you to me for my support. But no, seriously. No. All right, thank you, everybody.
No, please, don't.
Thanks to Justing for the music, New Media for the artwork, and a big high five to Jeff at Central Sound and Picture.
If you enjoy the podcast, please tell your friends and subscribe. You can contact us on Facebook and Twitter at The Owlish Folk. Send us questions or comments to theowlishfolk@gmail.com.
Do you have anything else to add?
I hate when people say espresso.